Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan is brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% more on car insurance. We are celebrating the Nats World Series Championship from 1 year ago. Our anniversary celebration on The Fan is brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation. Save 10% on windows and doors in October. Contact paulhenrywindows.com for details. Dave Jagler was on the call, not just of World Series Game 7, but every game all of last season and for the last several years with Charlie Slows, and he joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Jags, first of all, tell people about tonight so they can re-hear the game itself, which will be fun, but you guys are doing like a mystery science bit or whatever where you sit there and you break the game down between innings as well?
Yeah, well, yeah. It starts at 6 o'clock. It's going to be the rebroadcast of Game 7 from last year, including the post-game show and including the highlight montage that Vic Ferrer put together of all the postseason highlights. But yeah, in between the commercial breaks, not everyone, but at key times in the game, Charlie and I are going to break in and tell some stories, talk about what we were thinking, kind of set up what was happening, analyze what had happened. And obviously we have the benefit of a year of hindsight to do that. So hopefully that'll add a little more enjoyment. But I think just the fact to listen to a game, a normal game with fans, and to think back where we were just 1 year ago should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to kind of listening back to it. Obviously, I've heard the highlight calls a ton, but to listen back to just kind of the minutia of the game and as the game unfolded will be a lot of fun.
When I go back in history, just thinking about great moments for DC sports, my buddies and I who were kids when Washington won the Super Bowl, Jags, I'll go, you remember that one? There was that one play that Timmy Smith had, or that one play where they recovered the fumble on the kickoff. I remember these little kinds of moments like that, in addition to the headliners that we'll see. Give me one of those where you're having a beer in 25 years with a bunch of people talking about this World Series run, and you'll kind of shake your head and say, well, don't forget about this one. Give me a couple of those.
Oh, man. I mean, to me, obviously Game 7, the whole game turned – on the Kendrick foul pole, but I look at a couple plays in that game defensively. I mean, we were going back looking over our scorebook in Game 7, like in the second, third, fourth, and fifth innings, the Astros had chances to break open the game in every inning, and whether it's Soto's catch in the second inning or Yordan Alvarez hit a bomb to center field, but center field is endless in Houston. I mean, I know they took the hill out, but it's still a pretty good poke out there. If he pulled that ball at all, that was going to be a three-run homer. Instead, Robles was able to run it down. So it was just kind of that feeling in that game of the Nationals kind of hanging on for dear life, keeping it close, waiting for the offense to come around. I mean, there were a lot of those moments in the course of the series that I think were big. The Suzuki home run in Game 2, right after Strasburg had gotten out of the big jam in the bottom of the sixth inning in Game 2. Game 6, they were trailing for a good chunk of that game. And again, Eaton was right in the middle of it, hitting that home run, and then Soto following with the home run there. And to me, the great sequence in Game 6 when Turner's called out and then Rendon hits the home run and Davey gets ejected and all heck breaks loose. So there were a lot of memorable moments. As far as Game 7, it was kind of, obviously not really going well until it turned, and then it did, and the Nationals dominated the late innings. And the video crew that was in our booth caught my reaction when the two-run single happened in the top of the ninth inning. And that's when it kind of – that's for me when it all hit that, hey, they're going to win this darn thing. I mean, when it was sitting there at 4-2, you're in Houston, they're a good lineup, looping a blast, you're not feeling comfortable. But when they made it 6-2 in the top of the ninth, that's when I – I realized we're going to do this. This is going to happen. And then you shift into the mode of getting ready for the postgame show. So those moments a year later are still very vivid in my mind. And I can still kind of feel myself being in Houston for those moments. It's really fun to look back on it.
Listen to Dave tonight at 6 p.m. with Charlie Slows right here on 106.7 The Fan. Jags, you saw like we did. At this point, you're in the middle of your offseason, so you're kind of watching from afar like a spectator like the rest of us. But Adam Eaton, Anibal Sanchez, Sean Doolittle, Howie Kendrick among the World Series heroes that might be on their way out with either expiring contracts, now free agents, or options that the team didn't pick up. I mean, I guess just because we're talking about the World Series a year ago today, it's hard not to, while all of those decisions, in my opinion, are the right decisions, it's hard to hear that and not just have some sadness at the end of an era.
Totally. Because, and it's even worse, Grant, because of what we just had for the 2020 season. I mean, and Mike Rizzo, for the most part, put the band back together for the when the season was going to start in March of 2020. I mean, I know Dozier was gone and Parra was gone, and obviously they were missing a pretty big piece at third base. But you know, he brought a lot of the veteran pieces back, and they were going to, you know, kind of try to get that mix going again. And the fans never got the chance to really acknowledge that team. And whatever, you know, if Dozier had come back for another team, and he eventually came back with the Mets when there were no fans, you know, he would have gotten a standing ovation for his first at bat coming up there in a different uniform. So we missed out on all that. The acknowledgement of the team on the field. I mean, can you imagine what the sound would have been like when Howie Kendrick was introduced on opening day of 2020 with a full house? We never got to see that. We never got to kind of put 2019 to bed, watch the banner go up. We missed all that. We were denied that as fans. And now as the team breaks apart even more, there is that sense of sadness that what was truly a special group in 2019, you know, when you see it in 2021, it's going to look even a whole lot different than it did in 2020. So, yeah, there is some sadness to that, but that's the nature of pro sports. The beat goes on, and the team will look a little bit different next year.
So some guys that will be here next year that we know about, Jags. Now, tiny sample, obviously, for Strasburg, and he was injured. But nonetheless, an ERA over 10 in a couple of his starts. Patrick Corbin, 466, gave up a lot of hits, especially on his fastball. And the bar that Max Scherzer has set for himself, it's probably unfair, the expectations, but he was just regular very good. ERA of 374, over 67 innings pitched. That's the big three. How sure are we that that's still a big three going forward?
Well, I mean, I think it obviously it has to be. I'm going to take the side of feeling sure about it because, you know, for Strasburg, the season, I'm not going to look at any numbers for what happened. And it seems like he's come through the carpal tunnel surgery okay. He's going to have, well, again, let's couch this by saying we hope a normal spring training. I mean, I think you can't underestimate what that did to those particular pitchers. I mean, Scherzer talked about how, you know, as the season came to an end after 60 games, he was kind of rounding into form. And if you think about 2019, I believe his record was 2-6 at the end of May. And we had that whole narrative how the Nationals couldn't win Max Scherzer starts. And then all of a sudden he went on that run going into the All-Star break of seven starts that were some of the best seven that he had in his career with the Nationals before the injuries got him. So, yeah, he was kind of rounding into form. I think if Max had had 30 starts in 2020, he would have had a more typical Max Scherzer season than what the final numbers will say. So, again, with a full spring for Max, I think over 30 to 32 starts, he's going to give you an elite performance. You know, Corbin's the one, his velocity was down from day one in 2020. And maybe he has to do a little bit of tweaking or reinventing. I mean, obviously the slider is the big weapon, but the fastball was hit pretty hard this year. Does he try to incorporate a change up a little more or change his sequencing? Again, I think over 30 to 32 starts, his performance would have been more in line with his career norms than what you saw over 11 or 12 starts. And as much as you talk about those three, I'm a little more concerned about 4 and 5, because right now 4 is gone with Sanchez not being returned. Joe Ross opted out, so he's back. Both did not have a good season. Fetty had ups and downs. You know, what do the Nationals do to kind of fortify behind the big three to take a little bit of pressure off them? That's as big a question as anything.
Dave Jagler on Grant and Danny, the big one at one every single day, and we love when Jags joins us on the big one at one, driven by your local Honda dealer. This fall, find adventure in a new Honda. See your local Honda dealer today. Jags, Halloween tomorrow. Do you have your ramekin sealed up with chicken broth and your pouches, your little baggies of kale that you're passing out? Are you doing, like, individually wrapped salads, or is it just kale? What are you doing this year?
No, come on, man. I'm not, you know, I can have some fun, too. I don't have two servings of ice cream like Danny. I mean, I like my desserts, and, you know, I'm trying to be socially conscious here. I have the little, you know, sandwich bag type size things, and I'm putting three little mini candy bars, trying to mix in a Butterfinger, a Baby Ruth, and a Nestle Crunch. Every kid's going to get one of each, and they're going to be hermetically sealed. I'll put them in a plate out on the porch with the light on, and we'll see if the first kid comes and grabs, you know, 20 of them, or if they are more respectful and take one at a time, and we'll see how long it lasts. But yeah, candy will be given out. No salad, no kale.
Yeah, Jags does like that fun. Sometimes he orders dressing right on there, not on the side. He lets someone else do it. That's living.
I tell you, man, let it all hang out. Get going crazy, yep.
Jags, thank you, buddy. Good talking to you, as always.
See you, buddy.
Hey, you'll hear a lot of me at 6 o'clock tonight. It's going to be fun.
We will be tuned in. We are looking forward to it. I can't wait for the broadcast, Ian Charlie, as we will relive the game and get their analysis, you know, in between the innings of what they were thinking in real time. He was just talking about Halloween. We can get back into that, Danny. What are the plans that people have? I want to hear from you at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny, or at 800-636-1067. Plus, bottom of the hour at 1:30, we've got our confidence points picks to make. It is a football Friday, so we've got to pick our five games of the weekend and assign confidence points here on G&D. Danny, I'm putting together my picks for confidence points right now, going through all the spreads. We normally use the odds that are provided by the DraftKings Sportsbook. And I saw that 19.5-point line for the Jets and the Chiefs.
It's a big one.
It's hard not to take 19.5 points in the NFL. So I originally put that down. I'm like, this will be one of the five games. I got to take this somewhere. But I've deleted it, and as of right now, it's not making the cut. It feels like you need to. You get that many points in the National Football League, you just got to take the points. But there's a reason you're getting that many points.
That's right. It's not some random incident. And it opened up, by the way, at 21. So it's been bet down to 19.5. But that doesn't happen. That's Alabama's homecoming game. You know, that's Clemson playing, a certain subsection of Carolina. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way that happens in the NFL. Unless you get this kind of thing where one team is just such a disaster that we're going, well, they scored 10 points this past week. It was their best game of the season.
Unreal. I do have the Cowboys and the Eagles featured. We'll get to our picks in just a moment. You can hit us up on Twitter, as we said, at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny, with your thoughts on Halloween. So are you anticipating a comparable turnout than to what you normally get? Have you had Halloween in the house you're in right now, or did you guys move after that?
We moved right before Halloween, so we were in September of last year at the residence. The neighborhood is jumping during Halloween, so there's tons and tons of kids in this neighborhood, and our old neighborhood had even more, if that's even possible, people right on top of each other. So I don't know what it's going to be like. I think everybody's kind of doing something muted, and if kids are trick-or-treating, everybody's going to have a setup kind of like we're talking about, where we're going to leave out, you know, just easy-to-grab bags of candy. I forget even what we have. I literally just saw it 10 minutes ago, and I can't remember what it was. But we're going to do that, sort of individually wrapped bags for everybody, so people's hands aren't in the same bowl. Just going off some website that we saw what to do, or whatever it was that my wife forwarded to me. So we're going to do that, but our destination is back in our old neighborhood with a bunch of the families and friends that we played with.
We don't know how to prepare because we're in a new neighborhood we've never been in, and we were told that last year we got over 100 trick-or-treaters in the neighborhood right where we live. But obviously with this year and the protocols being different and presumably a lot of people are just going to be doing different things. Now, I'm guessing we're going to get way fewer, so that it's hard to kind of plan for it. I wonder, because there are places where they're not doing it at all. All right, how about this question? Somebody texted me this yesterday. We were trying to put together a little list. What will the most popular Halloween costumes be this year? The easy one to answer is like Tiger King and Carol Baskin. I think you're going to get a million of those, even kids, because their parents will think it's funny to dress the kid up like that. I mean, a lot of times if you're young enough, you wear whatever your parents think is funny and creative or whatever. Anything, though, that you think is uber timely to 2020 that would be a Halloween costume? I mean, is there something like, I mean, people always make dumb jokes about the time, right? So I don't know that it's funny to make fun of a global pandemic, but is there something related to being quarantined or whatever? Like, what will the costume be this year, do you think?
Yeah, someone in a big bubble. I think you'll see a lot of Harley Quinn. Everyone's tried to make Harley Quinn a thing. That movie Birds of Prey, which, by the way, was terrible.
When did that – is that this year? I don't even remember that coming out.
Yeah, I think it came out at the beginning of this year. Maybe late last year. I don't know. But it was really, really, really bad, but everybody was determined to like it, so they gave it good reviews. I think it was horrendous. But people like Harley Quinn or Wonder Woman, something like that. I don't know why, but like I've got girls' costumes in my mind because my friend just sent me a picture of her daughter dressed up as like a big lion or something. That didn't make any sense. The costumes from Cheer, the Netflix show, you might see some Cheer. That was a big deal for a lot of parents, I wonder. For dudes' costumes, your normal run of superheroes. You know, like we got a Spider-Man costume upstairs.
Stick with the Avengers.
Yeah, like anybody that's been in or around the Avengers is usually a pretty good bet.
Yeah, Tom said like that you might get that off color. Like one person who's doing the, you know, they are the coronavirus.
Yeah, it would be like the little picture of like the microscopic organism virus
where they're just
a big ball and they just have all these red dots all over them.
I could see that. Yeah, someone doing a bad bit. I mean, someone's going to just put on their normal mask that they wear every day and be like, I'm a person going out to get groceries. And, you know, you always get the unfunny, like, let's do the obvious thing. What are you being? I'm being a dad of a trick-or-treater. I'm just me. It's a lot of that on Halloween, too, for people that don't wear costumes. My buddy hit me up who lives near me. He was listening when I said I had all the king-size candy that I needed to get rid of. He said, hey, I'm coming over. I'll get a couple. I said, no problem. Please take 10. He said, I'm probably not going to be wearing a costume. I said, you don't have any costumes? He said, yeah, I got this, this, and this. I said, well, wear one of those, and I'll give you 10 candy bars. That's the way this works. Put on a costume. Come on over. I'll hand you 10 candy bars, and we'll have a good weekend.
My buddy just texted me, Cobra Kai, dude. Cobra Kai.
Ooh,
I think that's going to be huge. That's going to be huge.
That's a great idea.
Yep. Easy to do, too, right?
I would think, yeah. I mean, I think you could knock that out in like 10 minutes. That's pretty easy. When you were a kid, did you do more costume or like homemade mom built you something? Because we always did.
Homemade mom built stuff.
Did you? So we always, like I would always be a Power Ranger. I remember one year I was like the Will Ferrell cheerleader type guy. Like, but that was when I was probably 13 or 14 or something. But as a kid, I was almost always a Power Ranger or like a Ninja Turtle. Actual costumes. I don't think we ever did the homemade bedsheet ghost kid thing.
Oh, it was always so nubby. My folks would, you know, they were cheap and they're a lot like me. Go figure, right?
They were spending all that money on St. Albans.
Right. They would spend money on what they felt was important to spend money on. So they were not cheap at times and beyond the point of frugality at other times. Like they couldn't fathom the idea of spending, you know, whatever it is, $49.99 on something you'd wear one time and complain about the entire time. Maybe I threw enough tantrums as a little kid that I don't remember because I'm going through it now with my son. He has picked out a costume. We're on four straight years of him, from all the things in the world that he could get, selecting a costume, and then when it comes to the day of or the day before, throwing an absolute tantrum like it's acid on his skin, having to put the thing on that he selected. And so I vowed, I'm never spending money on this again, ever. And my wife's like, oh, man, you could spend it. That's fine. I will never put dollars towards a costume for that child ever again. And I mean that. It's not going to happen ever again. So maybe that's what happened. And I don't remember that part.
I
it's
bet
ridiculous.
You anything that that's not how this goes. You're saying that there's a 0% chance he ever gets a costume to wear on Halloween again.
Oh, he might, but I'm not going to be the one to spend the money on it. So it's obviously, the, you know, the wife and I.
So your wife can go
do it. We're married. She's allowed to do what she wants, of course. She is an autonomous human being. I told her that I will not be spending money on a costume for our son ever again. I will not go through that again.
Because he had a temper tantrum last year?
This is now year three. He's doing it again right now. He has had a meltdown in the middle of the school day where all the other kids in the class are wearing costumes. And they do their dumb Zoom session and so you can present your costume. They had a Halloween parade yesterday where everybody's supposed to wear their costumes and do a live video feed. He refused to do it then. Refused to do it today. He's now talking about refusing to do
it
tomorrow.
So will you go trick-or-treating with him, or are you out on that as well?
I'm happy to go. And he'll be the jackass in plain clothes, and he'll have to live with that. I am never fighting again about costumes with him. The number of hours that I have sunk, the dollars that I have sunk, it is over for me. The last straw occurred approximately 27 minutes ago when I went upstairs to grab a sandwich and some water, and I heard screaming meltdowns when my wife is trying to work. My youngest son is screaming too, because he just screamed because he's two, and it's an absolute disaster, and it's his fault because he simply refuses to wear the costume that he selected. So now you don't get to select him anymore. You're done with the selection process. You're off the board.
He had a good run of Halloween costumes. Isn't he, by the way, people are like, oh, maybe he's 10 or 11. It's fine.
Seven.
He's 7 years old. Wheelhouse age for great Halloween. For the next
Should
three
so
or four
fun.
Years, it's the best. Halloween is
Should
the
be
best.
So much fun. Should be so much fun. He ruins it every year. This is the third straight year he's ruined it. He will not ruin it anymore. I don't care what you do. I will not spend the money. I will not deal with the hassle. I'm not going to fight you and beg you to put on a costume that you selected. I won't do it again.
All right. Hopefully next we don't ruin our Sundays by making bad picks. We got to pick five games with confidence points. We'll update the show's standings. Grant and Danny on a Football Friday on 106.7 The Fan. We're about to make our picks against the spread with confidence points for Week 8. Before we do that, I do want to remind you guys, you can compete against me and other hosts from Entercom all over the country. And you can even win cash by picking games correctly. There's $1,000 up for grab every single week with the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up today at radio.com/picks and just pick the winner of each week's games. In fact, I did not get my Thursday Night Football pick in before kickoff last night, Danny. The game started, and I said, dag nabbit, I haven't done it yet. So I had to jump on, so I'm 0-1 to start the week, although I probably would have picked Carolina anyway, so who cares. But you can beat me, you can win some cash. So go do that, and I can promise you can beat me. The last couple of weeks I've been taking on a little water. It's the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Rules for this nationwide contest available at radio.com/picks. Without further ado, it is time to make our against the spread predictions. We've been keeping track of these all year long. Who's got the standings up? Do I need to pull them up, or does anybody have them?
I have them up. They're in front of me.
What do you got, Tommy?
Danny and Brendan are tied with 660 total points. I am in third with 640, and Grant is bringing up the rear right now with 580. Need a big week from Grant.
Ooh, I need to get hot. Need to get rolling. Something's got to give here, boys. All right. Last couple of weeks have not been pretty. So, without further ado, Danny, you and Dar are the leaders. Who wants to go first?
I'm happy to take it. Well, Dar works his way over to the mic. By the way, Dar was in last place not too long ago, right? Absolute heater for him, and
hey,
I have squandered my lead.
I think
lead.
He's been perfect the last 2 weeks. I think he's like 10 for his last 10.
He's close to it. He's doing really, really well. Good for you. Good for you. My 50-point play up in here. I think one team is bad. I think the other team has their number. This line, I think, is a little bit big, and I'm going to be squeamish about it, but my 50-point play, I think the Green Bay Packers beat the snot out of the Minnesota organization. I think they're just way better than Minnesota is. Green Bay had their hiccup. They had their slap in the face against Tampa. I think they roll in this one.
Brandon?
I wish I could say I was on a heater, but I went back and looked, and there were two perfect weeks sandwiched in between was a 1 out of 5. So it's not quite a heater, but it's every other week I'm looking okay.
Heater.
So this one's not looking great. My 50-point game is going to be the Bucs minus 12. I don't really love a lot of the games this week, and this is just the one I actually feel confident in.
It's a big line. But, yeah, they're a lot better than the Giants. That's a primetime game on Monday Night Football. Yay that we get to watch that on Monday night. Terrific. All right, Tommy, what do you got?
Well, I can tell you to start, we are playing confidence points, so of course I'm going to shade certain games differently than others. It's confident in regards to the short number on the side of the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks have too many options. They showed us last week with how Russell Wilson got tunnel vision with Tyler Lockett and forgot that DK Metcalf was even out there for most of the game. I think there's too many options for the Seahawks when it comes to their offensive structure. I think 3 is too short. I am taking the 3 points with the Seahawks 50-point play against the 49ers.
My 50-point play is also one of the good games this weekend like that one. I'm going to go to Steelers-Ravens, and I'm getting +4 for Pittsburgh, who I think is going to win the game outright. If Pittsburgh loses by a field goal, I'm still a big, fat winner. Yes, please, give me the Steelers +4 for 50 points. Brings us to the 40-point round, Danny.
Dallas, second-worst team in football, but their spread isn't big enough. Philadelphia beats them by more than 9.5. Again, that's a big number. It's a divisional game. I understand that. I think Dallas is reeling. I think they are a disaster. Philadelphia has played decently well. It's played better over the last couple weeks. I think they beat Dallas by more than 9.5.
Now, let me confirm with our book, because Dar and Thom do these in the morning. So I've got -9 for the Eagles in that game. What are we going with officially?
That's what I saw.
Okay.
-9, that's even better.
All right, so you'll take that. Brennan, what do you got?
I'm going to follow Grant on the Steelers +4 bandwagon for my 40-point play. Just getting that extra point and avoiding the three-point swing where Tom and Danny both missed on a game last week because of that three-point number. Give me the 4. I like the Steelers.
Yeah, I'm actually laying out of that game completely this week. I will bet it, but I'm not confident with confidence points, so I won't even be touching that game. I'm not too thrilled with the positioning of this game right now, but we have to lock it in today as we do this. Chicago Bears are 4.5-point dogs to the Saints. I think the Saints, even with their issues at wide receiver, Kamara is just a beast. They're going to start to get things back going. Saints, -4.5, 40-point play.
Same 40-point play for me, Thomas. Saints -4.5. And my logic here, probably not all that sound, but it's simple. The Bears struggle to score, and I think the Saints can do that. I think New Orleans, if they hang 31 or 34, is going to be 7 to 10 points better in this game. I just can't see Chicago hanging with them if their offense can make some plays vertically down the field. So give me the Saints -4.5, which brings us to our 30-pointers.
TB12, that's Tampa Bay favored by 12 over the Giants. The Giants are terrible. Tampa's really good. Pretty simple.
Up next, I got the Browns -2.5. It's probably going to be an ugly game, and I trust the ground game in Cleveland more than I trust the ground game from the Raiders.
Yeah, I'm with Dar on this. 30-point play, Browns -2.5. I don't think that the fall-off from what OBJ has done so far this year will really be much of a difference to what Rashard Higgins can do as the second wide receiver for the Browns. They're going to win big. 2.5 is too short. Hammer the Browns.
So this makes me want to zig a little bit here with these guys who are zigging. You got a little nervous when they were saying that, but I'm going to go with what I wrote down here. I'm going to stick with my gut. I got the Raiders, the opposite of this game, for 30 points, +2.5. I think the Raiders and Browns are kind of comparable in terms of overall talent and skill. Cleveland got off to a terrible start and got hot last week. They did lose Beckham. I agree that it's not going to be the death knell for their season or the crippler that a lot of people assume. I just think the Raiders aren't that bad. You know, they kind of week to week come and go, and for a couple of quarters hung with the Bucks last week. So give me Las Vegas +2.5 for 30 points.
You kind gentlemen have touched on it. My 20-point play, the Steelers against Sam Ravens, Aaron Hahn. I like the Steelers +4. This is going to be a field goal game in all likelihood. So I think actually I think Baltimore does win this game, but I think it's going to be really close. Give me the Pittsburgh +4.
I'm going to take the Bills -4. Again, I don't really feel good about this, but I feel better about Josh Allen than I do about Cam Newton. The 4 number is a little bit bigger than I'd prefer, but, I mean, it's tough to unsee what Cam Newton did against Denver last week.
My 20-point play, Danny covered it in his 50-point play. I agree with him. The Vikings are completely fraudulent. They can't get it going. There's starting to be rumblings about Mike Zimmer. There's starting to be rumblings about Kirk Cousins. Adam Thielen had to come out yesterday and kind of stand up for Kirk. Not a great position to be. The Packers are rolling. The Packers are going to continue to roll. 6.5 is too short. Hammer the Packers.
I love the Eagles in their game over the Cowboys. The line is so big for a division game between two kind of meh or worse teams that I can't give it more than 20 points assignment. But I love the Eagles in this spot. -9's a lot, so I'm going to put it at 20. I thought about going as high as 50. It's just a big, big spread. But DiNucci at quarterback for Dalton, very likely. The Eagles harass the heck out of passers and blitz a lot. I can't see Dallas moving the ball at all. And I think this could be like a 31-13 game. It's just a big, big number. So I'm going to have it a little lower down my board at 20 points for the Eagles -9.
Cleveland's last couple games have left me uninspired. Doors blown off by Pittsburgh and against Cincinnati. They won the game, but I think they're due for a little bit of a letdown. And I think the Raiders are pretty decent. I like that Raiders on the road +2.5. I think they beat the Cleveland Brown Paulsons this week.
I don't have a good reason for this, and it's mostly just to go off the board. But I'm going to take the Dolphins in a 1 o'clock game with the Rams coming across the country. Dolphins plus 3.5.
My 10-point play, I don't have a lot of confidence in it. That's why it's a 10-point play. I'm actually surprised that no one else has touched this game yet. Maybe, Grant, maybe you'll follow up on the other side. 10-point play, Cincinnati plus 6 against the Titans. I don't think they win, but I think they get inside that number of 6. Cincy plus 6.
Give me the Chargers as my 10-point play, minus 3.5. Denver's bad. Drew Lock makes them a little bit better than they would have been with Rippon or somebody else at quarterback. But the Chargers have an explosive offense that can score a bunch of points, as you saw this past week against Jacksonville. And I don't think Denver can do that. They're a little more balanced, and they run the ball. And they've got a Mike Zimmer-like head coach, and Vic Fangio is a longtime defensive mind. So I'll go Chargers, minus 3.5. And that'll round out our picks against the spread confidence points segment that we do each and every week. It's hard to track, I'm sure, as you're just listening, so I always post the picks on Sunday so you can follow along at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter with how everyone on the show is doing. You're listening to G&D on this Football Friday on The Fan. With Danny, I'm Grant. You are locked into The Fan. We have been spinning two plates today. It's a Football Friday. Love all of our Fridays ahead of football games in the fall. Let's break down as much of the NFL action coming up as we can. But it's also been a World Series anniversary special for the Nationals, who won the title a year ago today. We're celebrating all day long on The Fan. Pete will continue to do so coming up in 10 minutes at 2 o'clock. Paul Henry's window installation, making it all possible. Save 10% on windows and doors in October. Contact paulhenryswindows.com for details. Danny, I thought it'd be fitting just for a moment here before we put a bow on the show to talk about the Nationals, not from the perspective of a year ago's World Series, but the best free agents available this year. The guys that have been linked to them most often, I would say, are outfielders who can hit, like George Springer and Marcell Ozuna. Springer of the Astros just played in the playoffs, a 31-year-old, is a former World Series MVP, and Marcell Ozuna is coming off a monster season for the Atlanta Braves. The 30-year-old was a big-time slugger in the National League Championship Series. If they go the route of a bat, other than Springer and Ozuna, some names of interest. JT Realmuto is the best catcher available at 30 in the division with the Phillies. Before that, he played with the Marlins. I love DJ LeMahieu, who's won two batting titles, one in each league, with the Rockies and the Yankees, respectively. He plays second base. They could use a second baseman. You can find a home for LeMahieu, and he would add, you know, a contact bat who gets on base and can hit to the lineup. Justin Turner's older. He's 36. He's going to be a free agent, a third baseman. There is a hole at third. I'm not really interested based on his age. I'd rather go with a guy like Marcus Semien, the shortstop from the A's, and then move him to third out of position. But those are some of the bats, some of the names that are getting tossed around that if Washington wants to spend on a bat, which we all agree they should, that's where they would start their bidding. Do you like any of those guys more than the others?
I you know how I feel about DJ LeMahieu. I wanted him a few years ago. He obviously opted for the Yankees. I bet you he ends up going back to New York because he's, you know, he loves it there, and that lineup is amazing, and they, you know, have a great chance to win. I think it's probably the easiest, but I would love him because you could play him at second, you could play him at first, you could have some of that lineup flexibility where Starlin Castro is going to be in the mix and be a decent 6-7 hole bat on a decent lineup. But I think LeMahieu is a star and doesn't get properly appreciated because he played in Colorado for a while. I love Nick Castellanos, maybe like a tier down in terms of a good value. I think that guy's going to have. Ended up having a pretty good short stint. I think he'll have a good year next year as well. Springer's a name. That's a headline name. I mean, that guy, you know, we don't do clutch in the most traditional sense, but I'll tell you this, the guy's gotten a lot of big hits. The guy's been up in big moments and is certainly not scared of them. I think still has some juice left, but you're getting into these guys that are all north of 30, and do you want to be left holding the bag after 4 or 5 years, 6 years? Maybe you have to because your window, if you so believe it, is open right now.
Yeah, the only guys who are 30 on the nose would be Realmuto and Semien that we talked about. And among the big bats, power productive, home run hitter types, only Jock Peterson of the Dodgers, who's 29, and you almost have to platoon him as a lefty who doesn't handle left-handed pitching all that well. I mean, he's the only guy that's sub-30, and he will be for months. So you're right. In terms of age, You know, these are free agents that are about 30, but that's oftentimes when guys, particularly offensive players, are hitting their prime in baseball. From a pitching standpoint, the best available arms include the guy that's going to win the Cy Young Award in the NL, Trevor Bauer, Masahiro Tanaka of the Yankees, Marcus Stroman coming off of a season where he didn't pitch with the Mets, and Kevin Gausman, who came into his own later in his career here as he's 30 years old, coming off of a stint with San Francisco. I would love to dip into that Kevin Gausman, James Paxton, Mike Minor pool. No, Bauer's going to cost too much, and they're not going to do that. But if they could get a 3 or 4 year deal with a guy like Gausman to be a fourth starter, or maybe roll the dice on Paxton, who's had a bunch of injury issues with the Yankees but has electrifying stuff, I would really be interested in that.
Charlie Morton is going to be a free agent. That's not a long-term thing, right? He could be the Anibal Sanchez role. That guy's been really good. And for a 2 year deal, that's not the worst thing you could do. Jake Odorizzi is another guy that sort of fits that bill you're talking about, who's been injured a bunch, but you know, when he's healthy, he's pitched well. Same with Masahiro Tanaka. That second, maybe even call it third tier, 3-4 starters on a first division club has some intriguing guys. They could either be boom or bust in the sense that you could look back and go, how did they pay so little for James Paxton, who put together a healthy season and was excellent? Or do you remember that they signed James Paxton and he pitched twice? I have no idea how to view some of these guys that have been injured coming off this weird sample, but it's a deep market of guys that are kind of north of 30, and it depends on if you can get good value and if those guys maybe want to buy in a little bit and maybe earn a little bit less to go have a chance to win in an open division.
Couple of quick football notes here on the way out. First, and this is very surprising to me, Mike McCarthy has not yet ruled out Andy Dalton for the Eagles game. Today he said there's still a chance he could go. I suppose just, you know, Sunday night is better than Sunday day because it gives you several extra hours, but the way that he took that shot, being in the concussion protocol at that position, I'm going to bet against him playing, and maybe this is just a coach not wanting to admit it yet, but he's saying that they have not yet ruled out Dalton.
Well, that will change my equation. I got that as my 40-point confidence pick.
I know,
I guess,
right?
It's too late to change now, but I thought there was no shot that the Red Rocket was in the game. So it looks like it's that may change the equation there a little bit. If he can play, that would give Dallas some lift. Not enough to win the game, but some lift.
And of note, fantasy-wise, Dalvin Cook is going to play for the Vikings. He'll be back against the Packers this week. Pete is up next for Tommy and Brendan. All of you, thanks for listening. Enjoy Halloween.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.